back to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. Two little Australian radio fellas air checking the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows to find out why it's still so loved all these years later. I'm David Ferrier.
With Stephen Merchant.
I've listened to these shows heaps. This is Zach's first time listening through. We're getting his first time reaction to all the classics. Today's show, Series 2, Episode 2, aka Parrot's Blood, broadcast the 31st of August 2002. Zach, last week we called it a little ditty. What is your overall thoughts, ditty?
Carl steals a radio segment, and at the same time, he steals our hearts.
Very good. Very good. I've got Ricky is starting to show he's getting harder on Carl while still laughing just as hard at him.
Very good. It's you're kind of going a cryptic crossword this week. Very wordplay-y.
Zach, while I'm not preparing for like the week's episode, I am still listening to other episodes of the Ricky Gervais Show just while I'm driving around. That's how sort of sad I am. So I've been listening to much later in series two episodes and even into series three. And I'm starting to get a little bit apprehensive about getting to those ones because Ricky does start to get really hard on Carl when he starts like just openly calling him an idiot and a mank twat and stuff. It's like, it is what it is, but I particularly love these early episodes where he is in awe of Carl and is like nice to him. And I'm just, maybe it's just because I've got that in my mind. I'm very sort of alert to when that transition starts to happen. And I wonder if this is maybe the very early start of it, because he does throw him under the bus a couple of times in this episode. So that's what I'm thinking about when I wrote that little ditty.
There was, we spoke about in the first series about how Ricky was a lot less harsh on Carl in those early days because, you know, probably he gets more and more comfortable as friends and whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, at the start, you're not, you know,
he's a stranger.
It's totally inappropriate to be yelling at this stranger. So I wonder what changes. I wonder if it is like he always would have reacted like that and he was just a stranger. Or I wonder if it just gets a bit, I don't think he loses interest in him, because he does seem to find Carl as interesting, even in the kind of content that I was familiar with, you know, An Idiot Abroad and stuff like that. So I wonder if it is whether he's just tired, or that's what he always wanted to do, or it's just getting a bit old for him, or what do you think it is?
I think it's more comfort in their friendship to be more abusive for comedic effect.
Express what his thoughts always were, maybe, from the beginning.
I'm listening out for the first time he calls him an idiot. Like, you know, that's, which is, I think there's no turning back. There's B-I and A-I, before idiot and after idiot.
It's kind of like, you know, with your friends. Like, if you're hanging out with your friend and they say something silly, you know, everyone's going to, rip on them or have a bit of fun with it. But if you're, like, at the bus stop and someone next to you is, like, talking to you and they're giving you, you know, some out there theory on something, you kind of just go, oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. you're not gonna start, you know, ripping on them about it or making jokes about it, because they're a complete stranger and that would be totally inappropriate.
You only roast the ones you love. Amongst close friends, it is a real sign of affection if you're taking the absolute piss out of each other or the other person. But Ricky goes hard down that.
Yeah, right.
Like calling, like even in the podcast, it's just completely out of hand. But anyway, we've still got a long way to go before we get there. Let's cover off a bit of business. First of all, thank you to all the assistant producers who signed up on the Patreon, where you can get the show a week early and ad-free, when applicable, for just $2 Australian a month. As Zach says, it's the equivalent of a weird charge on your bank statement that you ignore, just $2. I'd like to say a particular thank you to Dan, who, Zach, I haven't told you this yet, he sent us a Dropbox link with individual MP3s of the shows that Carl did with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Wow.
So thank you, Dan. Don't know what we're going to do with those, but we'll think of something. So patreon.com/CarlyPilkBoys. You can keep us in Jaffa Cakes. And as I mentioned, maybe we could raise enough to get to Manchester in September for the RSK Fest. Now, Zach, I sent an Instagram DM to the festival just to put the feelers out, to be like, hey, look, crazy idea. We're in Australia. We do this podcast. If we manage to get over there for the festival, could we do a live show? Apparently, the order of the day and the events and what's going to happen has already been planned. But I've been told, but I've been told that's that anything could happen between now and September. That's what I thought.
Do you know what I think the next logical step would be? Is to get the pub across the road and start a rival festival of our
the
own.
Better RSK Fest.
Kind of like
what would it be called, Zach? How do we differentiate ourselves, or do we just call it the RSK Fest as well?
I'm not aware enough of the lore to kind of know. Is there anything where did they ever rally against anything on the show? During the years of making the podcast or the radio show,
Ricky really rallies against the results of the radio awards for the second year. He's not happy. He is really genuinely upset with how it plays out. So he really rallies against that. So we could call it Dr. Fox's RSK Fest. Dr. Fox presents.
Yeah, I was
Carly
thinking
Pilk
something
Boys
about Dr. Fox
hosting. Yeah. okay, leave that with us. They did, however, this is very nice. The guy who messaged me did offer that we could give away some tickets to the RSK
convention. That's a great idea. That's a great idea
on the podcast.
Yeah, that's
so.
Like, seeing as
I
like,
did say,
like a lot of our listeners do seem to be able to live in a place where they could go to that, whereas we, I think, couldn't live further away. Like, if you live on Earth, I don't think there's a spot further away than where we live. It's like the complete opposite side
true.
Of the globe.
It is literally, we would dig through the center of the Earth and come out the other end. We'd probably end up right around the RSK convention. So, yeah, it is nice of him to offer that. And if you're into that, if you're in that area and could get to Manchester for the festival in September, message us. Just
here's
let's,
an idea.
Let's just gauge some interest.
Here's an idea.
And we'll come up with a competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Could we do either one of the games from the show or one of the
segments?
Oh, we could
do Rockbusters.
But, see, because we can take calls, right? It'd be very difficult to sort out, like, with time differences and lining people up and telling people when we're recording and finding a phone line. But Your desk can take calls, right?
I can.
Yeah, so like we would be
and
able
I
to
have
get
a
people,
spare phone.
We would be able to get people on to do that. That could be a way that we could give out the tickets. It would be complicated. We'd have to figure out how we're going to do it, but it's possible technically.
It is, and with WhatsApp, international calling isn't really a problem. Coordinating it would be very hard. The radio show itself, they eventually just go to an email-only way of doing competitions. So we could potentially do that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I was thinking just a way to shamelessly help the show. We could do a competition like leave a review for the show on Apple Podcasts or even Spotify now have star reviews. Leave a review and we'll pick someone at random. Just mention, I don't know, there'll be some keyword to use. But anyway, first let's just gauge some if anyone is actually interested. Do you want to go to the RSK Fest? Are you in that part of the world? Send us a message. CarlyPilkBoysPod@gmail.com or Carly.PilkBoys on Instagram. Okay, let's do the air check for Series 2, Episode 2. So Break 1 and 2, they do a bit of what I would say is fairly traditional radio. They reintroduce Carl. And we immediately get a sense of him. He just totally knocks it out of the park when Steve asks him this simple question.
Age, Carl? I'll be 30 next month.
Really?
This month. No, next. Where are we?
I don't think we need to ask any more questions.
I think we've done it.
That's it.
I think we've done
it. Welcome to the world of Carl Pilkington.
Zach, could that have gone any better?
No, it's a perfect summary of Carl. And it also reminds me that they've hung around each other for a few years now, because wasn't it in the first series, wasn't he 27? Was he 27?
No, Steve turned 27.
Oh, okay.
Carl was 29.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, never mind.
His birthday is the 23rd of September, which is also right around the time of the RSK convention. So, and he'll be turning 50 this year. So it's all, you know, I want to be there.
Is he in London, Carl?
I think he lives in London. I don't know. He might pop along to the RSK convention.
Oh,
can you imagine that? He won't.
Couldn't imagine that's the case, no.
No, I cannot imagine he would be interested in that. Yeah, so they're doing resetting here. They're like, okay, let's reintroduce Carl to the public. And that is something that they don't traditionally do on this show. But if you're in a regular radio show, that is like hammered. That doesn't even matter if it was the last break. We've talked about this a couple of times, Zach. It's like, whatever you were talking about, reset it, because people are just tuning in. Use a grab. And it makes me wonder, do you think, Zach, that it's... do you think maybe they've had an air check, or it's just early enough in their return?
Mm.
It's early enough in Series 2 that they're like, oh, let's just try a little bit.
I think something has changed, because last week, that's what probably my takeaway was it was just a little more slick. And so, you know, whether they were more intentional with it, whether they've, you know, someone's commented, I'm not sure. But last week I did enjoy it a lot more, because I just felt like that they had just 5 to 10% introduced a few radio craft, you know, techniques. And, you know, a lot of those things are tropey and we kind of make fun of. Like, I love making fun of it. But at the core of it, a lot of that stuff comes from an essence of truth, you know, like comes from an essence of like a helpful thing. So as long as you don't, you're not turning up to 100, which a lot of commercial radio does, you can take the essence of it. Like resetting, for example, is really helpful. Like I have listened to a lot of podcasts who like make it a point that they're not going to reset. And it's actually like, because they're like, no, people can invest in it and they can go back and listen to when we introduced ourselves and stuff. But why do that uphill battle? It is harder for the listener. Like so many times I was listening to those podcasts and I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. And I've listened to a lot of this. So I'm like, just quick little reset every now and then, fill people in. I think that's fine. Radio does, you know, when you're doing it every single break. And then sometimes in story arcs, when you've been going along a path for 3 months and it takes a minute and a half to fill everyone in on every part of the story before you start the new content, that's excruciating. So you don't need to do that. But, you know, just introduce who everyone is, especially Carl, who's not famous. Whereas I imagine at this point, they are trying to cash in on Ricky Gervais being a name, but no one knows who Carl is.
I'm with you, resetting every now and then. But then there are things like inside jokes that I like that they're not explained. For example, Hamish and Andy, when a caller gets on air, they say, "Happy birthday, Andy." You know that running joke that Andy doesn't like celebrating his birthdays? Little ones like that, I think you can let slide. Like if you stop down to explain, oh, well,
yes,
the reason he's saying that is because I don't like birthdays, so they found it's a fun way to annoy me. Just grinds everything to a halt. I don't need it.
Oh, yeah. I think it's, you know, there's like an investment ratio. So like if it's just going to be 3 seconds, someone making a reference to something, that's fine. Don't explain that. But if you're going to, you know, do 2 minutes on a segment, you know, maybe explain why you're talking about it.
There's a fun parallel I've just noticed. Your radio show, Collective Noun, is in sync with this show. So you've been back for 2 weeks now.
Yeah. So
you've just done your second show. This is the second show of the Series 2.
And
are you resetting
Are they still doing Saturday afternoons? Because our show is a Saturday afternoon show.
Yeah. Yep. Same time, 1 till 3.
Yeah. So
are you and Dom resetting a lot of things and reintroducing yourselves and doing
well,
all
we're
that stuff,
on a different network, you know, and so we are, and we haven't done it for 2 years, so we are. Yeah, it's weird because Dom and I know each other really well, and we gotta, you kind of gotta, some things that you wouldn't usually talk to the other person about, you kind of have to reset like who the person is. So, because sometimes that's important to the story. So like if someone is, whatever, I don't know. Let's just say they have a policy in their life that they never pay for parking. And then they want to tell a story about the extent they went to avoid a parking inspector. You know, if you're talking to your friend about that, you don't need to establish the fact that they never pay for parking. Like you and I, if we're talking about that, and you go, oh man, I had a run-in with a parking inspector, I wouldn't say, oh yeah, of course, because you never pay for parking. Because you'd be like, yeah, I know, man. Like,
yeah, that's established.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that where you kind of have to go like, and it's a bit unnatural, but that's kind of the gig.
Yeah. I love the idea of that in everyday context resetting for...
For those listening,
hey, I got the clubs, of course, because you are a big fan of golfing, and you got into it when you were on holiday with your in-laws. Continue. Well,
the other one that's really unnatural is the using of names. Like with your friend, you never use their names. I would never go, of course, Dave. But yeah, you are pushed to use the other person's name a lot so that the audience can learn who is who. Admittedly, it is difficult when you first listen to a radio show sometimes to figure out who's talking.
Yeah, and like those radio tropes, they're tropes for a reason, and that's that's a good one. Just using names helps differentiate, helps people work out where they are instead of just this mess of voices. So back on the show, they retread a couple of the classics, a couple of the Carl classics, where he grew up, who with. They mentioned the big-headed lads. Carl's best mate, whose dad was a copper, and they hook into the song with a tease that you won't hear anywhere else ever in the history of radio. Next, details of the pigeon-chested boy. In break three, they continue the Q&A with Carl. There's a bit of song passion when they come out of the Blur song, and that is one thing that is an absolute truism no matter which content director you're working with. They love music passion, and it makes total sense because... it's like 50% music, 30% ads, 30% talk. So when you love the music that they're playing,
can you imagine if that was a part of a radio promo? Like, you know how they do those jingles promoting the station? It's like 30% music, 30% ads, 40% talk. This is XFM.
I will never do it because what a sad thing to do, but I would be curious to see what the breakdown is through a full day. I think through a full day, because in Australia, particularly on commercial radio, it's like there's a drive show and a breakfast show and then a night show, which is more usually, depending on the station, more music heavy than say breakfast shows. What the breakdown is. I think it would probably be like 60% music and then the other 40% would be a battle between the ads and the talk.
Yeah, it's a lot of ads, basically.
Particularly in breakfast, every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then through the day, it's like top of the hour and then usually at the 40 past. But hey, there's a lot of bills to pay, a lot of salaries to cover. Steve goes into a good producer mode again Carl is asked the question from inside the actor's studio. Zach, he's asked about what he'd like to do, and Carl says this about being, he'd like to be a handyman. Do you agree with Ricky that this makes no sense, or was it quite clear to you? Let's see what he says.
Well, sort of an all-rounder.
Right, right. A handyman.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you know, you don't get paid that much, but it's useful, isn't it? So,
but you'd get your own show, couldn't you, with Carol Smiley eventually?
Well, all that, but the money that you don't make, you save by not having to pay someone else to do the chores. Do you
right,
know what
okay. I don't know what that sentence meant.
What'd you make of that?
Well, when I first listened to it, I was walking out and about, you know, I was at the shops. And so it was just a jumble of words. So I was like, what did he say? What? And then I just kind of went on with it. I was like, oh, you know, Ricky's making fun of him. It mustn't have made sense. But when I'm listening to it then, it made perfect sense. So maybe Ricky just missed something. But yeah, it makes perfect sense, right?
That's probably what it is. And I'm probably being too harsh on Ricky. But I'm like, I'm very alert to when the worm is starting to turn. And it's like he's so ready for that to be wrong that he jumps in instead of thinking about it. And he does it again later with the what's the song thing, where he's like instantly, that's stupid, doesn't make sense. But then when you step back and think about it for a minute, like, yeah, you remove costs if you can repair things yourself.
It's a handy point too. Like, I've thought about that a number of times over the last couple of years since I've moved into a house. I'm like, I wish I could fix some of this stuff, but I don't have any useful skills.
Well, my friend Nick, who's a comedian, says, well, I'd rather work at what I'm good at so I can afford to then employ people to do that. Why would I bother trying to learn how to do something bad when I can like use my skills and talents to go out and try to make more money doing what I'm good at, and then I can pay someone to do it?
Yeah, that's yeah, I think I mentioned last week the call that I saw on YouTube of where Ricky, he's a part of a radio show and they called Carl, and he's really annoyed because he's tiling at the time. And that's exactly what Ricky says.
Yeah.
He says, he says I'm paid at a higher rate, which is kind of like a pretty classist thing to say. But he says, like, I'm paid at a higher rate than a tiler. So me tiling would be a waste of my time. So I do what I do, and then I pay a tiler to do what they do. I think Tyler is the trade that he talks about. But I do agree in principle, but there is something self-sufficient about being able to fix a lot of things. And also, like, you know, you got to wait for tradespeople to come out. At the moment, in Australia at least, there's long lines for things like that. You've got to, there's a hassle to it. If you can just get your toolbox out and, you know, get the putty and cover the hole in the wall or whatever, I don't know how it works. I've had holes in my wall for ages cause I can't fix them. I don't know. It seems like there's a balance between, like, you should have some skills, and at the moment I have none.
Yeah, I also do find there is a personal satisfaction and gratification if you can work it out and do it yourself. And more importantly, I am often considering what would my utility be in a post-apocalyptic world.
Well, people always need to laugh, Dave.
Well, just because it's I'm doing a very good job at that. I can make morning announcements on the PA.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine like a zombie comedy club where you're kind of bombing? you're just up there and you're like, oh guys, this is a tough crowd. I know it's been stressful lately, but we all need a bit of a laugh. Imagine it's like, and you're
just
like
fighting off zombies all day, and then going up to try to work out new
and
material.
Then
so
you're sitting, you're sitting side of stage, and you know your friends trying to like comfort you, and they're like, well, it's not the end of the world. And you're like, it kind of is.
So they then finish that break with Steve asking, what would you like God to say at the pearly gates? And his answer is, don't know, just be friendly. They then go into a quick backsell into the ads. That's another thing about this show. They get through more music than usual. And then we arrive at the parrot blood story. Here it is.
So the American doctor, right?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, what do you want to do? And it's all breaking up, right? Yeah. He goes, what you got to do? You got to, it's all breaking up. You've got to give him some parrot's blood, right?
Some parrot's blood?
Well, that's what he thought he said. But the line was really bad. Yeah. He meant parents' blood.
So what was your reaction to hearing this for the first time?
When I was like 7 or 8, I don't know, when I was a little kid, my neighbor told me that, you know, we're talking about where babies come from. And he said, oh yeah, I know. It's like when a girl and a boy kiss and they stay kissing for a long period of time, something from the boy goes through his mouth into her mouth and then a baby goes into her. This, a lot of these stories have the same energy. Like, you know, they're kind of these like urban mythy, like where did this come from? Kind of, it changes along he's told to one person and the next person and the next person, and it changes each time. It's just, I don't know if it's like, it reminds me of the schoolyard. I don't know if it was like of the era, but they all seem to have the same energy, don't you think?
So you're saying Carl Pilkington, a 29-year-old about to turn 30, the way he tells stories that he's heard about reminds you of the type of stories that that 7-year-olds tell each other in the schoolyard. I don't think you're wrong. I think you're right, and it's Carl's ignorance and naivety, which for the most part is innocent like this, where you're like, I can't believe he thinks this is this is legit.
Because the whole story doesn't make any sense, because when he talks about it being misheard, parents' blood doesn't make any more sense. It's like that's just as strange.
Well, can I shock you and yes. say that Carl was correct? It's a real story.
What do you mean?
So, it's 20 years later. It's much easier to access information. And this is I just did a simple Google search, and I'm going to take this, you know, with a grain of salt, but there's a lot of details in here. It's from the Vintage News. I don't know if that's a legitimate news source. On January 26, 1931, so coming up on the anniversary of that, what would that be? 70 the night coming up on the 91st anniversary of this happening. On the 26th of January 1931, a physician at St. Joseph's Hospital in Illinois injected a 15-year-old girl with parrot's blood. This story, which appeared in the Sunday edition of the San Bernardino Sun, reported that the patient, Lillian Fisher, was going to recover because of, or perhaps in spite of, the blood of a parrot, which was injected into her veins by mistake. According to the story, Lillian Fisher was suffering from infantile paralysis and admitted to St. Joseph's Hospital for treatment. The Mayo Clinic defines infantile paralysis as the once commonly used name for what modern medicine now calls polio. Thanks to modern vaccinations, there hasn't been a natural case of polio in the United States since 1979. However, in 1931, the disease was much more common and used to be treated with blood transfusions. So when Lillian Fisher's doctor, who was unnamed in the article, realized that Lillian required a blood transfusion, he quickly phoned Dr. George Howard Weaver at Durand Hospital in Chicago for advice. Dr. Weaver's recommendation was simple: use her parents' blood. However, this is not what Lillian's physician heard. After hanging up the phone, he searched frantically for a parrot, which he found and put under anesthetic. He then drew 5 cubic centimeters of blood from its heart and injected it into Lillian Fisher via intramuscular injection. After realizing his mistake, Lillian's physician blamed the interspecies blood transfusion on a bad phone connection. Dr. Weaver had said parents' blood, but Lillian's physician had heard parrot's blood. By the time the story was written and published, Lillian and the parrot were reported to be on their way to recovery. Thankfully, neither doctor claimed that her improved condition had anything to do with the parrot's blood. Instead, when Dr. Weaver found out about the mishap, he claimed that her recovery was not likely to have resulted from the injection. He also claimed that the transfusion should not have any negative long-term effects. So there's enough details in that to convince me. There's names, there's dates, there's hospital names.
Well, see,
what do you think? What do you make of Carl now?
Well, see, one issue with the way Carl tells stories is he doesn't give a time frame. So in my head, I was imagining a couple of decades before. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. But if we're going back at that stage, 70 years or, yeah, about 70 years, I can, that's a little more believable because, like, what I was thinking originally, parents' blood, that doesn't make any sense. But I guess maybe they didn't, they possibly didn't know about blood types, but they might have known that you can reject blood. And, you know, I don't know if there's a genetic link between your blood type and, you know, so I don't know if you're more likely to have a compatible blood type with a family member. You probably are, I guess, because, you know,
yeah,
when
so
you do,
where you get it from.
And, you know, when you do kidney transplants and stuff, don't you often have to get them from a family member? So maybe there is some type of link there. And in that case, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see how they came to that conclusion. But, you know, we're still reading this from vintagenews.com.
So take it with a grain of salt. But also when Carl, and it becomes a thing on the show, that even when there is an element of truth to what Carl, like he has read it at a, like a real story, but he just, he adds a lot of stuff that's not in the story.
Yes.
And there's a lot of conjecture. And it even becomes that it's like, oh, it's a phone call between England and America, which he makes up, and he paints a little picture that's full of erroneous details. What might be my favorite part of the whole story is in the following break when they're still talking about it, is when they ask Carl how he found this story online.
But what do you type in the search engine to find parrot blood stories? What were you looking for?
This woman with a weird head.
Why were you looking for that? What were you
doing? Just because I'd heard about it. I'd heard, like, someone talking about it on another station.
Right.
About this woman with a funny head.
Right. I love the fact you're intrigued with these things.
So he was trying to find out details on the story of the woman with a weird head. I reckon of the three of them, Carl is definitely he's the one who's the early adopter of internet search engines and going on nowadays you call it like you go on a fall down a YouTube hole where you like you start looking for one thing and then you find something else and then you know go further and further into it.
Well, this is one of my secondary enjoyments listening to the show is these kind of time and place moments where I just kind of think like, wow, you know, you don't realize time has passed until there's a bit of distance from it. And so like for the previous maybe 5 to 10 years, I'm like, yeah, the internet's really new or whatever. I didn't really process how far we've come until you hear stuff like this and you're like, whoa, that was 20 years ago. And oh yeah, I do remember early days of Google where it was much more difficult. You know, it wasn't on your phone. You had to like, at least in Australia, I think everyone had dial up, right? Where you had to like disconnect your phone and plug it into the wall and
yeah.
But I was so young.
That connection sound, that little song.
Yeah, I was so young that like this is like unlocking memories. I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And so it sounds like to be an adult at that time is fascinating because it sounds like that it was like this new thing because they say you spend a lot of time on the internet, Carl, don't you? And he's like, it's kind of a pride point. He's like, yeah, I'm always on the internet. Like, as if, like, that's a part of his personality. Yeah. I'm this curious guy who's looking at things on the internet. Whereas he wouldn't really say that to people these days. It would be more unique to be not on the internet all the time.
Yeah, and his attitude towards the internet has aged the best out of the three of them because they're very dismissive of the internet and internet users and people and saying it's just people putting spurious information on websites that anyone can do that. It's not... it's not a source of any sort of valid
Well, do you remember that?
Stories,
do you remember when you were at school, particularly primary school, like we weren't allowed to use the internet to source information because it was like, oh, you can't trust it, which I guess, you know, still is valid in a way. But I mean, what they should have been teaching us is like how to assess sources rather than just distrusting the whole thing. But I remember it was like, no. You mustn't look up information on the internet. We go to a library.
Yeah, that was the thing that you never, ever use Wikipedia. That was
whereas
just
now,
like an absolute
Wikipedia is
no
pretty good, out. Right?
I think like it lists its sources. Again, I think you nailed it with like it's about assessing the source of the information. Because if it's valid, then like why the hell would you not use it just because it's easily accessible. And so they want to know that you've done the work. You've gone to the library and you've gone through the books and, yeah.
Nothing will ever surpass...
Always use Wikipedia.
Nothing will ever surpass Encarta 95, the CD-ROM. Yeah. That was the peak of information sources.
It absolutely was. What more did you need to know? I remember working in a bookshop and we had like a complete Encyclopedia Britannica, like one of those ones, multiple volumes. And someone bought it one day. It was like $2,000. And this was in 2006 or something.
We had a version of it. I don't know. Like my family didn't really have much money. So I can't imagine it was like we probably got it from like a, you know, a thrift store or something like that. But I remember looking it up for like my primary school projects. Like I had an oral on penguins. And my mum's like, look it up in the encyclopedia. So like P, look for penguins. It has like a paragraph, right? Like, because it's in a book. Like that has to cover everything in the world. And so it's got a paragraph and mum's like, all right, put it in your oral. I'm like, well, I don't think that's enough information, mum. Like we're going to need some secondary sources here.
You need to go to the library and go to the P section and get a book completely about penguins, preferably written by David Attenborough. Whereas just yesterday, I went on a bit of a YouTube hole watching interactions with silverback gorillas in Rwanda. And I watched about an hour's worth of people just sitting there while gorillas inspected them and sometimes tried to intimidate them. Like I could do an oral speech on silverback gorillas and their interactions with tourists just based on that. And I'd do bloody well, thanks to the internet.
Isn't it great? Can you imagine? I would love to be like a kid now, like growing up. You know, what a difference 20 years makes. Because like no matter, when I was a kid, I would ask my dad stuff. I remember talking to him about physics. We had just learned about like kinetic energy and elastic energy, potential energy. It was like primary school level physics. I remember my dad, we'll walk into the shop, you know, to get an ice cream after dinner. And I was so excited. I was sharing it with him. He just goes, like, I don't know anything about that stuff. And we just kept walking. Like, that was the end of the conversation. Because there was no, if you didn't know, it was just like, well, how am I meant to find out? Like, now, you could watch, like, hours and hours and hours of, like, high quality documentaries on that, on any of the streaming services, YouTube. There's so much content.
Is that what you're planning to do with your daughter? Is whenever she's like learned something new at school when she's grown up, you will just slyly get your phone out and open the Wikipedia article for whatever she's talking about and go like, no, I agree. The way that the atoms interact is really wonderful.
It's going to be really interesting because when I was in year two, the teacher called me the question man. Like that was her way, I think, of like throwing a little bit of shade, like in a loving way. Because I'd be like, why? But why? Like, and I never thought I was being annoying. So I would get banned from asking questions. Like I had like a quota. It'd be like, you're allowed to ask 3 questions on this topic. and because I'd say any questions and I'd be the only kid with my hand up just like repeatedly. And I'm pretty sure my daughter, even though that she's only, you know, she's a toddler and she's not talking, I'm pretty sure she has a similar personality because she's just like obsessive about things. Like she wants to climb something and I pull her away from it. She'll go back to it 10 times and without even getting frustrated. Like she's not annoyed. You just pick her up and put it at the end of the house. She'll just turn around and run back down and climb it. And so my wife's been saying like, this is going to be your test. You know, you say that your parents, didn't want to answer your questions or got annoyed at your questions. It's like, now you get to put that into, let's see how you do with a kid that's constantly asking you questions.
Talk is easy. Let's see how you actually handle it when you're on the receiving end. That your teacher was definitely trying to shut you up. That was definitely I am earning $35,000 a year. I've got 30 other kids to take care of. Zach, shut your mouth.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
You are taking more than your quota of questions.
Yeah.
I almost skipped through a very important part of the show. Carl's origin of the phrase "chucking the baby out with the bathwater."
Yeah. At the end of the line, there's a little baby.
Yeah.
It's been playing out all day. Also got like little grubby knees and stuff. Needs to have a bath.
Yeah.
It goes in the bath, right? But because the water is so dirty,
sure.
They go and empty the water out of the window. Can't see the baby in it. Chucking the baby out with the bathwater. That's where it comes from.
Good laugh on that one. Zach, you're a prep parent. Do you ever forget that your daughter's in the bath?
No.
And go, what was I doing?
Well, one thing is,
after
you
scrubbed all the coal off yourself.
So what, hang on here. So the baby, I think they cover this off, but like the baby is bathing unattended, like in a bath deep enough to disappear
seems
in.
Seems to be.
Like, it's just
the... Seems to be. Yeah.
And also like it doesn't even line up with the meaning of the saying. Like, it's not about checking something before you throw it out. It's about, as Steve, I think, summarizes, don't throw out the whole concept. There might be, there's no need to throw everything out. There's still some things that we can recover from this. So it's kind of... this is the side of Carl I just don't understand, is why that's more appealing than, why does that make more sense to him than like a very logical explanation? Like that has a very simple explanation, but he gets excited. He wants to share this with everyone where it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. There's a little video on our Instagram, Carly.Pilkboys. It's one of the more recent posts where I was watching a random episode of this British show called If These Walls Could Talk. It's about the history of like domestic life, and each episode is about a different room and how it evolved into how the modern house is now. And I watched one about bathrooms, and the host was with someone at this place where it used to be like a bunch of houses for workers, and then there was one bathroom for everyone. There was like a few toilet blocks, and then there was like one bath, and they were talking about how like the order of who would get to use the water first and stuff. And she basically says the same thing as Carl. Sort of says like, well, it might be where the origin of the phrase throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because the kids would bathe last anyway. Go and watch that if you like, Carly.Pilkboys on Instagram. So the next big part of the show, and I think we'll just like have a broader conversation about this, is the very first iteration of what eventually becomes Rockbusters. And I want to note for the history books of this show, the first version is called What's the Song? And it's where Carl tells a story that describes the name of a song. It's very different to how the game ends up, Zach, but this is where we start. I think this is a great example, comparing it to our experiences in radio. It's a great example of why you should talk about ideas off air and even give them a few trial runs to kick the tires on the idea and find where the faults are. They don't do this. I love that they don't, because it wouldn't be the Ricky Gervais show if they did do anything planned. What did you make of it, Zach?
I think that it was pretty good, to be honest with you. Like, you said last week we start Rockbusters next week and it's a bit of a shambles. And, Ricky's pretty hard on it. I think it's... The only thing is he's too cryptic and the clues are a little too hard. But then people get them. So if people get them, it can't be too hard. He does need to sharpen it a little bit. It is confusing... In the first one he does with Steve, there were a lot of details that are unneeded. But besides that, I thought it was pretty good.
Well, the first one, the trial quit one for Steve, again, my theme of Ricky starting to be a bit hard on Carl, because it does basically make sense and Steve is a fan of it. Where I think it falls over is the next break after the song, where they go straight into the real game. First of all, they solicit and then immediately start taking live callers, which is madness. in any other radio show. I love it, though. You would solicit, go to a song, and during the song, you filter the callers to just put people live on air. Anything could happen. It's real. That's real Radio 101, that you shouldn't do that. But I love that they do it, obviously. And then it grinds to a halt because no one is getting it. And then you suddenly become trapped in the game, is you need a resolution, but no one's getting it. So you're just like, all right, it's no longer about the fun of the game. It's about like, come on, we need to find a correct answer as soon as possible. And it becomes hard work. And yeah, also the clue is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, yeah. This
she
is
can't have a bath. There's any number of other things you could, if she was electric.
Well, the balance.
But he sticks on like, it just even yes. She can't get wet.
Yeah. The balance between it can't be so easy that it's boring, and it can't be so hard that no one can get it. So you got to have it somewhere in between. It's, you know, that's the skill of it, I guess. It is hilarious, Carl. I've heard kind of versions of this on the radio before. I felt versions of this myself, but Carl expresses it in the funniest way, where he starts to get angry at the audience, and he can't think of another clue, so he just keeps yelling, think about it. Really think about it. It's easy when you think about it. But it's like, that's never worked. Like, just yelling, think about it at someone, it doesn't make it any easier.
Yeah. Essentially yelling, try harder.
Exactly. And so,
stop being dumb.
So does it, is it even remotely, I'm interested now how this develops. Is it even remotely the same game? Because I'm trying to figure out how this can be called Rockbusters. I'm just trying to link that name to the game. And I'm like, how does that, bit of a puzzle.
I don't want to give it away. We'll find out week by week.
And but I also
I
like,
it's a great.
I was just going to say, I also liked how much Carl was into it. I liked that he was obviously excited about an idea. He had come to them with excitement, and he really wanted to play it. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and when they arrive on the version that works and it starts to work, you hear that excitement from Carl. It's a real nice moment. But I think the whole process is a great example of if you're trying anything creative, don't wait for it to be perfect. You know, like just it's better to do it and work it out than not do it because you don't think it's quite ready. You get there. And in a radio show like this, it sort of allows for that experimentation. I love that he's called out that he's ripped the idea off Simon Mayo, that he used to do it on the Radio 1 breakfast show. That's pretty funny. And then it wraps up in break 10. So they do this for 3 breaks. And the first ever winner of What's the Song, later to become Rockbusters, is Neil. And he doesn't win anything. They just say, there's no prizes. Thanks, Neil. See you later. He's got a little place in
I actually in the like that, to be honest history. With you. We used to play a lot of games on one of our shows. And our boss was trying to give us prizes. But to me, I always thought if the game's not fun enough to play without prizes, you shouldn't put it on the radio. Like, I'm like, if you need prizes for callers to call up, to me, that's just an exchange. That's a mechanic to get prizes. I'm like, no, but we want to make fun games, things that people want to play and want to be involved with without having to get a prize. That was always our goal.
On my radio show right now, which is on every night of the week, and I do at least one game every night, never had a single prize.
Do you do like, see, one thing I do like is like either show specific prizes. So you might have like, like pencils or something like that, that you've made, like some really cheap prize, or, you know, some type of joke, like a leaderboard or something like that. I like those types of things. Do you do anything like that?
I do, yeah, for one game, which is like every night, it's a music thing where you have to, you work out the theme of like what the 5 songs they have in common. And we have an unofficial leaderboard because there's this one, there's like 2 or 3 people who always get it because they happen to be on their way to work each night at that time. So
this is that's the great part of radio is that type of thing is, and that's, Saturday afternoons are good, but it is fun to be, and I'm, you know, I'm loving the show that we're doing at the moment, but the great thing about being during, like, there's a different fun on the weekend. The fun on the weekend is that everyone's relaxed and no one's working. But when you are in a segment that you're a part of people's lives, so they listen going to work or coming from work, and you get regular callers, and that's something that podcasting can never do. Not in the same way that it's a live response. And so, like, those three people that are part of your leaderboard, they have this kind of, like, connection and this rivalry, that, and they don't have any connection to each other. That's a cool part of their day, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's only I've only ever had one person get angry, and off air was like, "You mean I was on national radio just then, and I won a competition, and I don't get anything?" Yep, sorry.
Oh man, you should have aired that. That's funny.
We were into the ads, and he was actually talking to Jack, the producer, not me. But yeah, no, I do make fun of the fact that we've got no prizes. I have in the past gone, Jack, what have they won? And he said, absolutely nothing. All right.
See, that's good too. Anyway. I also like being on shows that don't have any money, because I think that's way more fun. Like, if you have unlimited resources, it's no fun. You want to be the underdog. You want to be the small show. Like these guys are, they're kind of, you know, they get the dregs of the prizes. They always have, you know, like they go like, oh, we've got some type of CD pack to give away. I like that idea of they're like, well, we're so small and no one, you know, they're always complaining that, you know, they're not getting the same respect as the shows during the week, or they have a couple of times, you know. And so the idea that you had to scrounge around in the prize cupboard and you've got the dusty old CDs, I like that a lot better than $1,000 to give away.
Yeah, I've heard like breakfast shows being like, for calling in for a phone topic or something, they get like an Apple Watch or something. It was just the most ridiculous. All right, yeah, for calling in, we're going to give you 12 bottles of wine, thanks to Lindauer's sparkling wine. Yeah, it's I kind of think that's cool, but for a whole different reason, just because it's like, wow, these guys have got like great salespeople, basically. But
don't you think it's hard? If you're doing a comedy show, it's hard to be funny. I just think it's hard to be funny when I don't know what it is, but
when you're too generous,
it's hard to be funny when you've got this, you've got to be coming from a lowly position, or it's easier to come from a lowly position. It's hard to be funny when you're really rich, as we see time and time again with comedians who get super rich. It's hard to be funny when, you're giving away a house. Like, there's nothing funny about giving away a house. That's great radio content, and that's a great radio competition. But if it's purely for humor, there's not much funny about it. Do you get what I mean?
I'd go no further than the Ellen DeGeneres Show, one of the funniest, most generous shows on TV. That, like, is it even on, or did she get cancelled or something?
It ended a couple of years after that controversy, but it's hard to think that it didn't play a part.
Yeah. She was constantly giving the studio audience like gifts after gift after gift. And that show was hilarious. So before we move on, first of all, I've already said this before, I lament the death of the prize cupboard in radio, because no one, because it was always physical media and no one, you know, consumes physical media anymore. And the other one, quick pitch, because you talked about like show specific prizes. What do you think of this as a prize idea? Because I can draw pretty well, you know, and I thought it could be a prize for things on the radio show. Is like, I'll do, it's a rock station, it's a male centric rock station, that like, if you win the prize, I'll do a portrait of your favorite musician.
Love it.
Great. And it will be crap because I'm not going to spend any time on it, but that's kind of part of the fun, is you get some original artwork from the host of the show.
No, I love that. But I wonder if you could... Yeah. No, I like it. Wonder if you could incorporate that into the competition. It's just hard. Pitches have always been hard on radio, but I was thinking like... you know, is it Guess the Portrait? Guess the 30-second portrait, and it's on Instagram or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I do love it. I love... The issue I find with it is that you are too good at drawing. I'm like, yeah, that's a good price. Like, it's like... It's like... I saw someone recently, which I thought was a great idea. A friend of mine his kid, who's like eight, is selling their portraits. They'll do a portrait of you. And it's like an eight-year-old's drawing. You know, like those circles, and then they have arms sticking out the side. They're like $5 or something, and they'll send it to you. And I'm like, that's such a funny idea. You know, as long as the kid's getting the money and it wasn't a ploy for the parents to like make some beer money. But yeah, so I like the idea of giving people really bad things that they've paid for, kind of like signing up to our Patreon or, yeah, just like a bad prize.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I was just thinking maybe that's something I could include in a Patreon tier. It's like, if you sign up to this tier, I'll do a shit portrait of your favorite member out of Ricky, Steve, and Carl. Anyway.
No, you should do that. If you drew some artwork, that could be something that, yeah, we could send to people. Because, you know that, yeah, I reckon you could do that.
All right, I'll note that down for later. They then go, there's back-to-back quick breaks, and they talk about classic rock, which is just, again, very familiar to me because I work on a rock station, which the 80s is the real sweet spot. And I play, they joke about Toto, Hold the Line. I reckon I play that song once a fortnight, at least.
Yeah, don't you think it was funny that they didn't, it was like the other guys didn't know the song? I was like, I thought everyone knew. Hold the Line.
Early internet age, maybe before the 80s nostalgia had really kicked in. Yeah, I consider that song like very well known and very well loved. A real fun 80s hit.
A friend in high school really got into Toto, and it was the kind of thing, you know, the line that you've heard a million times from all your friends. Oh no, their well-known hits are their worst songs. He was into the deep cuts. So he's like, no, Africa and Hold the Line. Like, nah, those are no good. He's like, let me play you some album tracks. And of course, they were awful. Like it wasn't.
Man, Africa by Toto is one of the most triumphant songs in the history of music. It'll get any room full of people singing along. No album track's ever going to compete with that. They then end the show with the introduction of the closest thing I can think of in the history of the show that resembles an actual story arc. It has nothing to do with the show, but it's just something that's happening in Ricky's life, which he brings it to the show and he updates them on. And that is his involvement in a charity boxing match. Now, Zach, you'd never heard this before. How did this hit you? Pardon the pun.
The thing that stood out to me the most was, like, when you say charity boxing match, I thought that it was because he was a celebrity. But that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be like anyone can sign up, and he's just choosing to sign up because he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to be boxing a businessman or something like that. I was like, oh, I thought this was kind of like, is it the Red Nose Comic Relief? Is that what it's called? The big kind of night that they have in England?
Yeah, it is for sport relief.
Oh, okay. So it is.
And they make a program out of it. Well, I don't know. I think it is because he's involved in it.
Yeah.
And because they need to find someone in a similar weight class to him, and they might not be able to find like another celebrity, then they're leaving it open to be just someone who fits the bill.
It's not something that appeals to me at the moment, but it does seem to be like there seems to be maybe a fairly common thing where middle-aged men suddenly get interested in boxing. So, you know, give me 10 years and we'll see.
Well, I think it's one of the... Ricky is a fan of boxing. And now that he's achieved this level of status and success, this opportunity has popped up to train like a real boxer, and someone else will pay for it. He's like, I'll take it. Because it seems very out of character, because he never, ever does anything like this ever again. And when we reach, in the timeline of the show, when we reach the actual fight, I think we should definitely do a bonus podcast about the, it's like about a 40 minute show about the lead up and the fight itself.
Well, in some ways it's totally, in some ways it's totally out of character, because last week we heard about how he was basically just eating a block of melted cheese. So that's not very consistent with being an athlete. But if we think back to the first season, he was talking about one of the very early episodes. He was talking about having a personal trainer, and, you know, Carl played the Rocky theme. And so, you know, this thought has been in his head of getting in shape, I guess.
Yeah. And this is where it all culminates over the next several weeks. And then they end the show when a caller offered to fight Rick, but he was too young. And then they say goodbye. So what was your favorite bit, Zach?
I liked the, I guess what song I'm thinking. Which is, that is all a right. Great segment. That, like, you know, if you just came on your show and said, guess what song I'm thinking, I think you could make that into a really good segment just based on that title.
Without any cryptic clue? Just,
well, maybe the first guess you get someone just out of the blue. So when you first come on, you've got someone lined up already and you go, yeah, Daryl in, you know, Dubbo, what do you think? And he goes, I reckon it's Highway to Hell, AC/DC. And you go, nope. Okay, first clue. And as you go on, they get kind of more obvious. But then, you know, occasionally you could throw, what you're trying to do is the first guess someone gets it one night and you're just like, yep, that's it. Okay, here's, I don't know, Toto, hold the line. To me, that would be really funny if you just came on and go, guess what song I'm thinking? And they guessed it straight away. It's kind of like in Guess Who. In Guess Who, before I ask any questions, is I just take a long shot. I just go Alfred as my first one, because it's like 1 in 26. It's like you've got a shot. And if you pull that off, that's a pretty good get.
Well, with the type of radio show I do, which is just that I play so much music and I have very pretty short talk breaks, I could fill a whole show by just playing that game. And just each break is a new guess. But
you could make it funny if the the clues,
if I tried that too much.
If you could think of a theme of the clues that hadn't been done before, that was a bit surrealist or a bit offbeat, that could be fun. So instead of like, oh, they were born in London in 1961, you know, that's the way everyone has done clues before. But like, I don't know how you could do it, but like, if you could think of kind of a fun angle on the clues. That's kind of a little either cryptic or surreal or, you know, a twist on it. That could be good.
Zach, we've workshopped some fun ideas for my real radio show. And I appreciate that. And I thank you. But we should wrap this up. Sure. My favorite bit was Carl's response to his age. Just perfect. Beautiful. Up there with the when he was asking the question to when he was doing that quiz, the episode where Ross Noble. Who am I thinking of? The talk show host, Jonathan Ross, popped in and he stuffed up the question with the where, what. I think the him responding to how old he is just a perfect Carlism. So next week, season 2, episode 3, here's what to expect. Ricky is going on holidays. We hear about Steve's experience in an amateur production of The Pirates of Penzance. We're told the best thing that's ever happened to Carl, and Steve genuinely gets annoyed when he finds out Ricky went to an exclusive David Bowie gig and didn't invite Steve. If you're listening to this episode in the free feed, you can get episode 3 right now on our Patreon, patreon.com/CarlyPilkBoys. $2 a month, get the show a week early and ad free. Zach, are you pumped for next week from that tease?
I am. I like it when they, particularly Ricky and Steve, express genuine emotions. So I'm looking forward to hearing Steve annoyed.
This is a real good one. He tries to keep it funny, but you can tell he's genuinely hurt.
Yeah, those are my favorite
contact
moments.
Contact us, CarlyPilkBoysPod@gmail.com, Instagram, Carly.PilkBoys. The link to our merch is in the bio of our Instagram, the the fun little horse in the house design that I did. And follow Zach Mander on Instagram and TikTok, blowing up on TikTok, Zachmander. And me, David Ferrier Cartoons on Instagram. I barely ever post, but it's where I am. Zach, all right, we'll see you next week.
See you, Dave.
What were you looking for?
There was this woman with a weird head.